Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. This is our post-match reaction to Aston Villa's 3-0 defeat at Stamford Bridge on Saturday. And first of all, it wasn't really a 3-0 defeat game, was it? I mean, first half in particular, I thought Villa were the better side. And if you take the game as result value only, 3-0 looks bad, but in the context of the performance, it's probably our best game of the season in many ways, if you're just talking about the first half. Ash, you were there. James, I know you're laughing. You didn't say best performance of the season. I know
it was.
Sounds silly when you lose 3-0, but silly. First half, we were very good. Ash, you were there. How did you see it, first of all, before we get stuck into the topics we've got coming up?
Yeah, that's exactly what Dean Smith said afterwards. That's our best performance of the season so far, and it ends in a 3-0 defeat. Thanks for coming, kind of thing. And yeah, that first half is incredible. They're going out on the front foot, squeezing Chelsea into mistakes. Ramsey McGinn, the highlights for me. It's bold, brash. It really was, wasn't it? And then just that, just seeing the ball back in Kovacic. It's a really clever ball, cute ball over the top. Lukaku does what he does best. It's 1-0 and Villa chasing the towels after that. But they're still Preston. Watkins had a couple of good chances. Mendy saved twice, didn't he, from Konsa and Mings as well. And I think I said the stat coming up on Sky Sports, I said touches in the opposition box. I think after 20 minutes, Villa had like 10 touches in Chelsea's box. It doesn't happen at the Stamford Bridge. It doesn't happen against Chelsea, champions of Europe. So for me, Villa proved the point. They can mix it with the best of them. I like the new system, two up top, Ings and Watkins. That's going to come. Okay, it didn't come off at the weekend, but that'll come. Wing-backs were fine. Midfield was standout. So a lot of Douglas Luiz's work as well. Just a mistake, wasn't it? I'm sure we'll come to Mings' mistake. And you give Chelsea a second, he's going to be game over. So tough one to take, but lots of positives to build on. I'm looking forward to the Everton game now, Dan.
I think the first 10 or so minutes until Chelsea scored, it was a bit, you know, to and fro. But once Chelsea scored, it was like Villa just found another level and then another level. I was really impressed actually with Jacob Ramsey.
Yeah,
I don't expect to be saying that, but he seems to have come such a long way. He seems like he's got a real fire to kind of catch up on the lost time. Missed out on England duty, didn't he? Well, England youth duty, and he missed out on the last Villa game as well. So I think he's looking to make up for missing that. And he was really good. If you look at the player he was up against, Sal, you know, Jacob Ramsey versus, you shouldn't even, it's a joke. He looked like he was like knocking around in like, you know, school playground, Perry Beach. He's like great ball, just, you know, racing past people. He wasn't, you know, he was there having a great time. And I think yellow card was deserved for him, but it really killed his game as well, because he looked impressive physically and then he had to take a more advanced role. If he could have done a bit of both, maybe we could have had a bit more, but I'm sure we'll come on to the referee later. Probably the fairest yellow card he gave out of the day. I think it stunted him a little bit. And obviously it led to him coming off later, which was a bit of, you know, it was deflating for Villa at that point. But yeah, it was a tough one to swallow. You know, you can't argue with the goals at all, but you can argue with the fact that Villa played great football against a team that's verging on the elite and in their house as well. You know, you've got to beat Chelsea, man. You've got to be at your best. And Villa weren't. I didn't even have Martinez or, you know, they didn't have Buendia. You know, Bailey was on the bench. That's not even their best team or best formation. And that you play Chelsea off the park. But it's another moral victory and we should be past that point now.
Well, yeah, certainly can't gift them a goal, can you? You've got to be 10 out of 10 game. And Villa were, you know, first half were an 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. Were very good in that first half. But a cutting through ball to open scoring and a 97 million goal scorer puts a goal away. Like, shock horror, that's his job, isn't it? That's what they brought him to do. Then, as we said, we'll get on to the Mings thing later. Just on Ramsey quickly and McGinn, we were talking in a previous podcast about COVID and how that might affect them. Didn't affect them at all, did it? They were probably the two best players on the pitch.
You've got to go back a couple of podcasts as well, and it was our midfield's not good enough. We need to spend 40 million pound. I think Jacob Ramsey could save Villa a fortune here. I did note down in pre-season, he looked much bigger. in stature. He's really a size now, like a boxer, like his old man kind of stature. he was gliding past Chelsea at the bridge. And that's going to build his confidence. He can go to Stamford Bridge and give Sal the runaround and like he did. And that's going to bode well. So he backed up his Newcastle performance with another one at Chelsea. And let's see what he can do this season. Really good start from Ramsey. Likewise, McGinn. He's back to his best now. He always plays well at Stamford Bridge. And yeah, I thought he was very good as well. So I don't know what fans will be thinking listening to this. A couple of weeks ago, the midfield wasn't good enough. I think Ramsey McGinn have stepped up to the plate big time. And there's options in there now. Morgan Santon was back amongst the squad. So that's another option there. He will be like a new signing kind of thing, as cliche as that sounds. I like Douglas Luiz's work, I've said that. And they got Nkamba to come in for the games. Horses for courses. Villa aren't expected to have too much of the ball. Nkamba can do what he does. So options there. And I think Jacob Ramsey, yeah, he could save Villa millions there, mate.
I don't imagine Jacob Ramsey will start 35, 38 Premier League games, to be honest. And I think if James Ward-Prowse was available for 35, 40 million in the summer just gone, he would be Villa's midfielder now and would be starting in there. But rather than settle for option D or option E and put 15 million on somebody else, they've trusted Jacob Ramsey and said, right, go and start games in the Premier League at your age. And he's done very well to him, to be fair. And a big part of that is John McGinn improving a lot from last season as well. So at the moment, that midfield does look a lot more improved than it was. And as you said, Ash, we were all panicking about it a few weeks ago. And at the moment, it's the least of our concerns, isn't it? 3-5-2, surprised people. Patrick Rowe in our preview actually said, yeah, we should go with a 3-5-2 and match Chelsea. And I said, oh, Dean Smith won't change. What are you talking about, mate? And,
absolutely. Love that, Patrick.
Proved wrong at 4:30 on Saturday evening. to be fair, the 3-5-2 worked very well, especially in that first half. I think Smith's got it. I know we've lost the game, but Smith's got it pretty spot on in the sense that he's matched Chelsea, he's changed his system. And if it's not for a clinical finisher up front, a very good goalkeeper for Chelsea at the back as well, you know, Villa had some chances and Mings' mistake, it could be a very different game we're talking about. However, 3-5-2, is that a long-term solution? Because how you fit Buendia, Bailey, Trezeguet, Traore, El Ghazi, whichever the wingers you want to pick, how you fit those two into that system, they don't go, do they? And Villa haven't spent 60 million worth on Bailey and Buendia for them to be sub players.
That 3-5-2 is difficult because I think there's always going to be an element that revolves around the signing of Danny Ings and how we can, I guess, crowbar isn't the right word, but how you can fit him in, because you don't spend the money and pay the player for them just to be an option. They've got to be the guy. So when you've got that and Ollie Watkins, it's always going to be a headache for Dean Smith. And I don't know if 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2 or any kind of variation on a back three or back five is kind of the way to go forward, or if it was just situationally to match up with Chelsea. But in my opinion, it worked for almost everyone bar the player. It was probably built around to fit in. He was Danny Ings.
He was really,
really, really quiet. If you look at the kind of shot creating actions, kind of the involvement in the shooting, he was like non-existent. So he didn't make a shot at all. If you compare that with kind of Ollie Watkins, John McGinn, they made four each. Danny Ings didn't make one. He didn't have he had a single shot. But what's really encouraging is Chelsea, their top player was Callum Hudson-Odoi in terms of the shots created. He had four. Villa had four from two players, and then three from Jacob Ramsey and three from Douglas Luiz. So everyone was getting involved, even Tyrone Mings with you know, chance creation. People were getting involved. Yeah. It was just the guy that it was built around, kind of. Not in the same sense of building a team around Jack Grealish, but that formation is clearly there to fit in a second striker or more of a deeper striker like Danny Ings. And his impact was negligible. And I don't know if we'll say that often about Danny Ings, because he's already made a massive, massive impact for Villa so far. Yeah. But in a match where you needed a striker to score, it was a Watkins doing all that. And the guy who was, you know, your creator, your scorer, the main guy, essentially, isn't involved in any aspect bar pressing, which it's disappointing, but it's one you take on the chin, I think.
What did you make of that formation, Ash?
Yeah. James raised some good points about Danny Ings now. I'll be watching him closely in the upcoming weeks, because he had two goals in four games. He's 1-2 already, but he hasn't done too much in terms of goal involvement. That ball's quick against Newcastle, basically won it, and moments of magic he's come up with. So yeah, watch Danny in closely next couple of weeks, see where he fits in. He might come out the team this weekend, we don't know. But yeah, the formation itself, I asked Smith about trying to get in your Baileys and your Bertrand Traore's and how you're going to fit them in. He said it's horses for courses. He said he has the luxury to fit the system when he wants to now and to keep opposition guessing. He mentioned that as well. He said Tuchel expected him to play two sixes, like they always do, and they basically played two eights, pushed them right up, and Charles could deal with that. And I think McGinn made some telling comments as well. He said we targeted Saul, his first Premier League start. We targeted him, got really good success out of him. And then half time, what does Tuchel do? He brings on Jorginho, he steadies it down a little bit, and Chelsea win the game. So, yeah, it's going to be keep an eye on the tactics. It's going to be really intriguing to see how it pans out. I think Villa will switch systems quite a lot this season. I can see that happening. When Bailey came on against Chelsea, he came on centrally, which surprised me a little bit. He came on like central midfield kind of thing, a bit further forward. I thought, are you really going for it? Yeah, I was really impressed with Bailey. A lot of people said to me, I didn't see too much of him, but close cut. The press bench at Stamford Bridge, really close to the pitch. Just his feet. I mean, he didn't give the ball away too many times. He's twisting Rudiger inside out. He made Alonso really enjoyed himself in that half an hour he had. So I'm really, really excited about him. He could play as a nine, you know. Ings comes out and Bailey could play up there. I've got no problems with that. Yeah. He said that before as well. So there's options of plenty, and it's down to the man who's paid the books to do so, Dean Smith, to find the right formula.
Well, one of the biggest criticisms that Dean Smith gets thrown at him over the last 3 years, pretty much, is an over-reliance on Jack Grealish and an over-reliance on one system.
Exactly that.
And we've not played the same way in any game this season so far, and reverting to a three-at-the-back formation to match up a potential Premier League champion this season does show tactical flexibility from Smith. So, you know, it's in one essence, it's a good headache to have how we're sitting here going, how do you fit Danny Ings in? How do you fit Emi Buendia in and Leon Bailey, £90 million worth of signings this summer? But you've got to find a way to fit them in because we've signed those players to replace Jack Grealish, and two of those three don't even play yesterday. I know Buendia is not available, but you know, again, he doesn't really fit into a 3-5-2 either. So again, it's a good headache for them to have, and I don't know whether it'll be as simple as playing a 4-3-3 at home and a three at the back system away, but having that flexibility to change it up is only a good thing for Villa, I'd assume.
Job now is to keep players happy as well, being in and out of the side, which I suspect they will be. But I think they're just going to keep the opposition guessing, and they're going to try and outthink opposition managers and target weaknesses, Everton this weekend as well. So, yeah, really interesting. A lot of the set piece angle as well. I studied the set pieces at the weekend. They're just causing mayhem in Chelsea box. Cash launching it in. They look for Ezra Konsa every single time from deep free kicks. McGinn was whipping in. Konsa got a lot of first contact. So, a bit unfortunate, but that double save for Mendy came from a set piece as well. And McGinn's corner is really interesting as well. He whips it straight at the keeper. And Mendy was flapping a little bit. So, that set piece angle with Austin McPhee in now as well. I think Villa are keeping opposition teams guessing kind of thing, and you don't know how they're going to play out. So yeah, you just want to see that works as well. And I think we need to get the best out of Ings and Watkins as well, which we tasked with Aaron Danks, the new striker coach.
So interesting to see kind of the same routine be brought up at the set pieces, because I think Danny Murphy on Match of the Day went, you know, it's just them chucking it in, essentially, to paraphrase, just them chucking it into a box. But you see, when you see it once, you know, it's just a thing, but you see over and over, it's, you know, looking for Konsa or looking for Minks to knock it down all the time, because they will, like, not 100% of the time, but they got really strong chances of beating people to the ball, and it's unstoppable in essence. Yeah. The only thing that stops it is kind of the chaos that follows after, which is the design of it, is to kind of break down that tactic. So it's really interesting to kind of see us commit to it, because can you really defend it? No, it defends itself almost in how the chances, you know, how up to luck it can be. But if you have to challenge Tyrone Mings or Ezra Konsa to a ball, do you win it? You know, it's really difficult.
It changes the way the defenders have to think as well. Because one of the Chelsea guys just smashed out for a throw-in early on, and I thought, we've got a long throw in our game now. That's as good as just whacking it out for a corner for no reason. So it's something else for them to think about, knowing that I can't just blast this out into the stands here, because Villa are dangerous from throw-ins as well.
I think it's better than a corner. That's how I feel, because like a corner, I think it's underrated how hard a corner can be to take. in the Premier League. Like, you've got to get it over the first guy, but enough dip, you know, it's got a curve away from the keeper. You can just, like, chuck it off someone's head, like, you know, with and the angle's different. So I feel like Villa have got a real weapon now. And we've said it before, but, you know, it didn't come off against Chelsea, but it in a sense it did, because the threat that it provided and the chances it made, we were already making from open play as well. So, you know, there's a lot of positives to take there, like, on and off the ball.
Yeah, we talk about small margins of football as well, don't we? If that's a small margin that wins you a game, then it's absolutely worth sticking with. And you know, if one of those double save from Mendy doesn't go in and it's Villa that score on the 47th minute rather than Chelsea and it goes 1-1, then maybe we're talking about a very different game. We'll talk about that 47th minute incident now with Tyrone Mings. It's been the big kind of subject on social media since the game. Mings has since come out on social media, and apologised for his sloppy back pass. First of all, before we get stuck into the actual technicalities of what he's done, did he need to apologise? Is that something he felt like he had to do?
No, not for me. He didn't do it on purpose, did he? So, just unfortunate. He's held his hands up. Smith asked Smith about that as well. How is Mings in the dressing room? He basically apologised to the lads as well. It happens in football, doesn't it? Ollie Watkins missed two chances. The one where he rounded him and he should have done better. No one speaks about that. And then because Mings messes up for a goal, the game's over, isn't it? So, yeah. For me, doesn't need to apologise. Mings he's incredibly in the Villa shirt, isn't he, over the last however long he's been there now. So, that's fine on my behalf then.
It's very kind of black and white with Tyrone Mings, whether you're on his side or you're against him, is what it feels like on social media anyway. And I'm obviously on the camp of I'm with Tyrone Mings here. I'm defending my club captain, essentially. Like, I'm not going to say, people have said, does he deserve to be dropped? Should he not be the captain anymore? How is he an England international? He's a liability. He's a joke. I don't agree with any of those kind of things. He's made a sloppy back pass and we've conceded off the back of it. Ultimately, in a game we're already losing against Chelsea, which no one expected us to get anything out of anyway. I'm not using that as an excuse because, yeah, it still was poor. There's a difference between people abusing him, which I've seen on social media as well, and being able to criticise his performance or a mistake. But some of the things that you say that you see written saying, oh, he's got a mistake in him every game, he's cost us so many points, he's made so many errors since in his time at Villa. I don't think any of that's true. It doesn't cost us points every game. He got an assist and a clean sheet against Newcastle 2 or 3 weeks ago. So he won us points.
Could have had the goal as well, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yes, I understand it was a mistake and it's frustrating, but I'm not going to pin it, you know, us losing the game on one man who's now our captain and has done a lot of good for Villa. How did you assess the actual incident, James? Because, again, I've seen people trying to excuse Tyrone Mings or saying, well, maybe Tonzabi's pass wasn't great or Steer didn't come out as quick as Martinez might have. And they're all if buts and maybes. Yeah, maybe if you add all those together, maybe Martinez does come out quicker and deal with that, or Tonzabi's pass is slightly better and onto Mings' stronger foot so he can take a touch earlier. It's little moments that maybe do change that incident, but ultimately Mings' pass was poor, it was sloppy, and that has led to a goal. Is that how you saw it, or were there all other things at play there?
No, it was. Look, it's a bad pass, but you know it wasn't designed in his head to be a bad pass. It was an instinctive pass. He's done it without essentially thinking. He's done it based on kind of the system that Villa have played, where you pass it back and that keeper's already rushing off his line. It's a new keeper, Chester. There's obviously the pass wasn't perfectly played to begin with. Nobody's reacted to it in the way they probably should have done. But then again, if they did, if Steer raced off his line quicker, would he have cleared it before Kovacic broke through? I don't think so. But the argument is there to be made that nobody reacts to a Mings mistake like Mings reacts to everyone else's mistakes. So, yeah, it's a bad pass. Sailed the game away for us. There's arguments to be made for all sorts of things, but it was a, you know, that's the instance when it deflates. And Mings knows that. You see the reaction. He's already up in arms against himself about it. He's not pointing fingers. Nobody's pointing the finger at him. But then you see a situation kind of later on where Cons is mugged off, like, on the halfway line, like in no man's land. It's breaking through. Mings is the one covering the mistake. Mm. You don't have a stat for how many mistakes, like, say, how many times Emi Martinez has bowed out someone. You don't have a stat for that. You don't have a stat for how many times Konza's bowed out Mings, how many times Mings has bowed out Konza. But, you know, the proof is when Mings makes a mistake, he's usually the covering defender. He's usually the last man standing. If he makes a mistake, it's going to be worse than anyone else on the team because of the position he plays. But with me saying all that, that's not a justification of it. It's just kind of the explanation and the take. Maybe if Martinez is there, it's something they always do, and he knows he's already racing off his line to clear it. It's not a problem. It's something that's dangerous.
It's still under hit pass, though. Even if Martinez has got to be on it to get onto it, it's still under hit it.
It's always going to be a problem with Villa playing like that. And it's always going to be a problem with Villa making mistakes across the pitch with them not being, you know, being a non-elite team. Any sport, a team that isn't elite is going to make a lot of mistakes because of the teams they're playing against and the way, you know, their ambitions. You're always going to make mistakes because of these ambitions. You can punt the ball all the time. You can play 4-4-2 and, you know, have the big man knock it down and play risk-free. What does that like win you? The way Villa want to play is going to cause mistakes.
I saw a tweet saying that if Tyrone Mings doesn't make the odd mistake here and there, he wouldn't be playing for Villa.
I remember obviously writing with Ash on Villa like probably a year and a half ago, and you're talking John Stones being bunged off to West Ham because he's not getting a game and because he's crap. And now, you know, these English defenders, Harry Maguire, if you want to talk about mistakes, you can see compilations of Harry Maguire getting spun time after time in the same game by Mo Salah. These things happen, like, and it's just, we might not be looking for them with the hyper-fixation that we do on Tyrone Mings. Things happen. Tyrone Mings led the league in errors, depending on a certain definition of an error. It could be you miss a challenge or miss a header rather than under-hit the pass back. You know, so you can't excuse it, but errors happen all the time in English football because it's not, the game isn't set up for defenders to have a comfortable time. It's, you know, it's set up for attackers to run at them constantly. So, you know, attackers have never been better than they are now. They've never been as fast as they are now. They've never been as smart as they are now. That there's a lot going against being a defender. Doesn't excuse it, but it's really hard to do the job that a John Stones, Harry Maguire, Tyrone Mings, or any centre-back pairing in the Premier League does. But you saw it against Callum Wilson. Got pushed off, didn't play to the whistle. Always going to be concerns, mate. I don't know how you feel, though, Ash, about the whole thing.
I think Villa are a stronger team with Mings in it, bottom line. Yeah. Seen that throughout lockdown. I think Courtney Horse coming to the side against Palace, and Villa struggled. And against Brentford, Mings at the team. Tony was given space, wasn't he? He scored, so whose mistake was that? It's one of them, isn't it? For me, I think Mings is the leader. I think Villa need him in the side. Nine games out of ten, I think Mings is on point, and he's really good. So, no issues with me. It's a mistake. He'll learn from it. If the ball comes to him in that situation again, I think he'll know what to do this time.
The counter argument to that, sorry, Ash, to butt in, is that, and I'm trying to play the card of people that are against Mings here. Yeah. I know that we haven't got the comments here with us. I can see people saying you're defending him too much, is what people say to the three of us, because we're all Mings here. So I'm trying to put Mings out, essentially, argument across.
Yeah,
they'll say that he doesn't learn from it, and that he's done it a few times before. So that's his problem. The odd mistake is fine. We all make mistakes. We're all human. You know, us three will make a mistake on this podcast and the rest of our work day, and it's only 11 o'clock on Monday. Yep. We're all normal people that make mistakes. The argument that people say is that he's made these mistakes before and hasn't learned from them. So is that the issue here, that he might make that again? And then that's why people don't want him in the side.
I know we say it's sailed the game away, but there's also an element where Villa just didn't score anyway. So you have to look at the stuff that's happening up front, and you could say, yeah, Villa are always in that game. Chances are they never even ever score in that match. You know, it wasn't looking likely. There's missing passes. I think Ings to Watkins.
Yeah.
You know, there's chances that are not going to be recorded on an expected goals match because a shot didn't register. I think the most famous example is Gascoigne's slide. You know, I forget when that was, but it is your clear-cut chance across the box, slides and misses it. It's not a shot. It's an open goal. It goes down as a massive expected goals register back in the day, if the stat was recorded. Because it was a shot, because it wasn't a shot, it's not recorded as a chance. So you don't have, you know, any bar of that. So Villa had that happen a few times, not essentially missing an open goal, but you had the chances where if the ball had hit the feet and if a shot had taken, you were then dominating, and they were already making plenty of chances and they weren't taken. You know, you heap pressure on your defense if you don't take chances. It's a team game. You know, you can't, you know, it's a whole fluid unit. And if they're not taking chances at the top, there's pressure going to be at, you know, at the back, essentially. So it goes swings and roundabouts. We spoke about Brentford a minute ago when Tyrone Mings went playing and there was a mistake. Funnily enough, that isn't registered as an error. In the stats chart where people are beating Tyrone Mings with, and fair play, you know, you're using numbers to back it up, but the context is a clear error happened against Brentford, not recorded as an error. What's the definition of an error? essentially.
What's the opposite of an error as well? What is there a stat that registers a, you know, timings nudges someone at a corner to put the striker off, getting a header away and stops a goal that way? I know that's a minor example, but that's not a stat that we register. So you can find things on both sides to say this is why he shouldn't be in the team and this is why he should. Final word I want to get from you, Ash, and on this topic really, because I know that we're probably going to get too bogged down on it, is the words that come with these performances, that it's always a mistake in him, he's a liability, stuff like that. Is he a liability to Aston Villa?
Not at all, no.
Should he be dropped? Should he not be captain?
No, he's a pillar of strength for me, for the lads out there. You ask his teammates who go to the field, and they want means with them. I think he's fine for me. I think this weekend against Everton, though, I think Dean Smith could bring in Courtney Horse, you know, because he always brings Horse in the games where he's expecting long balls. Your Burnley's against Chris Wood and Calvert-Lewin this weekend. Horse could come in, I think, perhaps two and
four Mings.
No, I think Mings sticks in there. I think he's like a lieutenant for Smith, isn't he? Tyrone Mings. I think he's well liked. He's favoured. He's a skipper, and if performances do dip, I think Smith will take him out the side. But it's up to Mings now to bounce back after that mistake and put in a commanding display. So yeah, I could see Horse coming in this weekend, perhaps two and Zabe to go and try and stop Calvert-Lewin winning balls in the air. I can see that happening. I think Mings is a big part of Villa's set pieces going forward now as well. I think that Villa chuck all three centre-halves in the box against Chelsea, so he's adding to his arsenal that way as well. So, is Mings a liability? No, not for me, but from time to time, there was a rick. There's a rick in every player. Like James said, John Stone's got a rick in him. But others, Maguire, the same. Defenders do have a mistake in them a lot of the time because they're under pressure and they're coming up against the best league best strikers in the world. And I thought Villa defended okay at the bridge. I mean, Lukaku had two shots. He scored two, obviously.
Yeah.
But they did nullify that threat when for large parts. I mean, they outshot Chelsea 18-12, was it? I mean, so they did all right in that respect, but just Lukaku's clinical edge and just that mistake killed the game. So I think Mings stays in the team this weekend and there could be a change with Horse coming in.
I think the most important thing to be said is that he's not a liability because Villa weren't... The fates were completely conspiring against Aston Villa. Against Chelsea. I get it when it happened against Fulham. It's happened a few times, hasn't it? But against Fulham, I think you saw the perfect reaction in Mings gives away the really silly goal and then he is the complete inspiration for the comeback after that. So the mentality, you can't exchange what that brings to the team, but you also can't forgive the mistakes. They're always going to happen with the level kind of Villa at and the player that they can buy and bring to the club. But you look at Chelsea and there's three mistakes committed by each member of that central defence in varying level of how horrendous that mistake is. You have Konsa giving the ball away, it's covered. You have Tranzabi being completely stood up by Lukaku. Whether that's a mistake is completely up for debate, but people say, could he have had more assistance? Was it a mistake on another defender or was it on Tranzabi? Completely up for that. And of course, you've got Mings passing back. But, you know, you look at all these things and we can have the debate constantly, but at the end of the day, he's picked for England for a reason. He's picked for Aston Villa for a reason. And that's because people in these camps know a lot more than us about the type of player Tyrone Mings is and what he brings to a team. The kind of armchair analysis of defenders has never been brilliant. I mean, I wouldn't know how you would kind of judge them at the same standards as the England kind of data analysis or the Villa data analysis, because defensive metrics, to my eyes, are poor and they don't tell a story. Josh Onoma kind of led tackles for Villa in loads of games. What does that even say? You know, what do you get from? Do you get that Josh Onoma's the best defender in the squad? You don't. You probably get that he loses the ball load. So I don't know what you get. People say brought up Courtney Horse. He wins all the aerials. Man plays a game and Villa have never looked poorer defensively. Because of the organisation.
Sorry to keep butting in.
That's the
overreaction on social media, I tweeted saying, as soon as it happened, I was like, we're in for another night of Tyrone Mings slander then. and people go, he deserves it. He doesn't. Let's just get out of the way first of all. Deserves criticism of a back pass that was under him.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm not going to sit here and excuse him and say, oh, he's a brilliant world-class defender, because he isn't. That was a mistake. I'm absolutely on board with that. I agree. It cost us points against Chelsea, potentially. As you said, Jones, we didn't even score. Does he deserve abuse online? Absolutely not. Does he deserve abuse in the stadium? Should he be dropped from the team? No. Should he be dropped as captain? No. Should he be dropped from England? Arguably not. That's a different story. I don't really care about England to a lesser extent. But I just don't agree with some of the stuff that will come off the back of this, that he should be dropped and that he's a liability and he's a joke and he should never be near the team. And stuff last night about, I was getting tweets about his mental health. Someone was tweeting me saying, oh, he must have missed his sports psychologist appointment last night. It's like, what are you talking about?
I think
that kind of thing doesn't go hand in hand with anything really, but he's made a mistake on the football pitch, and that's as far as it goes. You want him to balance back from that. There doesn't need to be this big, massive witch hunt on the back of it.
We're not in control of Aston Villa's kind of selection and transfer policy. People like to think that we are. But if you get on Tyrone Mings' back, I don't think it will probably happen at Villa Park, but it's certainly happened on social media. If you get on his back, it's going to start affecting not him, not just him, but Aston Villa camp. You know, you've seen player Henry Lansbury and Amar Al-Ghazi completely sack off social media. Al-Ghazi became like a really kind of integral part of the squad. You know, whilst they're in a Villa shirt, I think it's really important to back them, not avoid the criticism, but certainly not abuse them. You know, I think
we've talked about this so many times now, it shouldn't even be a talking point.
The criticism has to be balanced and fair. You know, if you're not, you know, if you're hyper fixating on what Mings does, you're missing a lot. And that's not to say like everyone's committing the same amount of mistakes as Mings. It's just, it's really weird to see the reaction of Mings. And then people say, when you are against Mings, oh, you've opened your eyes, almost like you've taken, like, you know, on the Matrix, like, and you've swung the other level. It's not, it's just, it's absolute bias and almost like a complete delusion to hyper fixate on a single player's mistakes, because it is 11 players and it all, that error isn't just a single moment. It's a lot of stuff kind of that's built up, you know, through training and the system. Is that back pass met, you know, played and then under hit because of certain reasons? We don't know, but what we do know is we certainly shouldn't be going straight on social media and saying, like, really, not just like, oh, that was crap and you were rubbish, like really awful stuff that you see. Like, it does have an impact, mate.
And from a footballing perspective, I know you just said, Ash, about my horse could do a job against Everton. People saying, oh, get Courtney Hawes in there, drop Mings. You're talking about dropping your club captain for your fourth choice centre-back. And from a footballing perspective, does that improve the side, playing Courtney Hawes instead of Tyrone Mings? I don't think it does.
Do you reckon Villa missed John Terry's impact this season? I think only four teams have conceded more than Villa so far for the four games. I can't see Villa getting close to 15 clean sheets this season based on their output already. So, yeah, Will Terry's departing we felt amongst Mings's concerts and whatnot, and Shakespeare's the more defensive coach out of Smith's backroom team now. So it'd be interesting to see how they move forward with it. I think like everyone, Mings needs to improve as well, and defensively Villa needs to improve as well. So we'll see, but yeah, four centre halves at the club now. I mean, two of them did very well last season, didn't they? Mings and Kanta, part of that little triangle with Martinez as well. So yeah, we'll see. But for me, Mings stays in the team. I think his performances have been pretty sound to date, and you got to play well to keep your place, haven't you? That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
If Mings has another rip this weekend, then question marks will be asked. But overall, I'm pretty happy with Mings this season and the way he's starting. But yeah, like you say, Dan, the horse could come in this weekend. We'll see.
Just to end then, somebody who didn't have a sound performance this weekend was the referee, Stuart Atwell, I think it was. Poor referees again. I don't want to keep bashing them on the podcast, because a game not long ago, we had to mention the referee being poor. I think it was possibly either Newcastle or Brentford, I can't remember which, me and Matt spoke about it. Terrible refereeing yesterday. It's just a lack of consistency. I can't get on board with some of the things that were yellow cards for Villa weren't yellow for Chelsea. And I just don't know why we're dealing with these poor referees in the highest level of football at this point, or supposedly the best league in the world, and amateurish refereeing.
Yeah, Villa picked up two yellows in the first 30 minutes, and Jacob Ramsey absolutely was asking for it. So, like, you can't argue with that, but there were a few challenges on the other side that weren't picked up, and Villa's, like, yellow cards, you got two in the first 30, and you got two in the last minute, and one of them was Matt Target, like, berated by the referee.
Yeah, that's
like,
all he said about him.
Yeah, yeah, you could see. And John McGinn, to a lesser extent, probably more so picked up the yellow for his reaction, probably rather than the challenge. But you know, the yellow for Ramsey absolutely deserved, but you can see how it kind of, it was in Villa's thinking you had to take off Ramsey because he was probably, in the manner of the play, he was, you know, he was more cautious than he was than he started off the match, which was hampering the way he plays. Same with John McGinn. I mean, he didn't get the yellow card to the 90th minute, but if he picks up a yellow 60 minutes, it's going to hamper the way he plays. Chelsea didn't pick up a yellow into the 61st minute, which was Marcus Alonso. And by then, I'm not saying they should have had three or four. They should have had a yellow before then, because same type of challenges. Both teams are right, and both teams were very fair, but very aggressive and very rough. You know, the biggest foul, again, you know, hands on from Jacob Ramsey, but it happens both sides, and it wasn't getting picked up, and it stunts the flow of the game negatively for Villa, because they've got two players on the booking who are aggressive. You know, got Mings, Ramsey, who have to alter how they approach the game on a yellow, and it affects a lot of Villa's game plan. They managed without it, but Chelsea didn't have to worry about that. They didn't have to worry about anything. You know, the flow of the game went completely their way. Maybe it's something Villa have to learn. Maybe they have to go, right, we can't just play the way we want to all the time because of different referees. I don't know if that's right, but certainly it's a condition you probably need to adapt to. You probably can't be this team on the front foot on the press all the time if referees simply aren't going to let you play. It's not right, but, you know, you suffer for it.
I was mentioning about the press bench at Chelsea. He's so close to the dugout. It's quite good watching Smith reacting to or giving the four official loads.
Did he say anything about juggling balls this time?
No, he's less enough that one. But
I don't know if he even said that. I feel like he said something like, it was a bit more like, you know, effing and blinding from the TV rather than what he said.
It was, yeah. He was on at the fourth official. He said, like, what, Charles McManaman and Watkins all game, that's the same one, and stuff like that. I think Rudiger was giving Ings loads as well. And Ings went to the line and said, have a watch that. Yeah, so it was going on both sets. And in the end, like James says, McGinn and Target just had enough of it by the end. And they got the bookings, and really frustrating one. Chelsea got a lot of favourable decisions, to say the least. So, yeah, Stuart Atwell was the man. And we'll see when he officiates Villa again, hopefully. not in the too distant future.
Monday, as we're recording this, we'll be doing some kind of Everton preview on Friday afternoon, I believe, before we kick off on Saturday evening at Villa Park. But just a quick one from the both of you. How do Villa bounce back from a 3-0 defeat? How do we go out there and try and beat Everton on Saturday?
Home fans behind you. You want to win your home games, didn't you? Yeah, need to bounce back in style. Last home game was a bit of a damp squad, wasn't it, at Brentford? Didn't really play too well that day. So, yeah, they need to back it up. They've shown what they can do at the bridge against a team that's going for the title this season. So why can't they do it against Everton? And hopefully have more joy. They'll have more chances, I'm guessing. So, and we'll see what the system is prior to kick-off. No doubt Smith will kick us all guessing. So we'll see what he goes with. And it'll be an intriguing watch. And like James said earlier in the podcast, obviously more of Danny Ings, get him involved a little bit more. Get the chances falling his way. And I'm sure he'll score. So yeah, we'll see. I think the squad's looking much healthier now. There's only Carney and Jaden Philogene-Badois that are sidelined at present. We'll see how their fitnesses are this week. Keenan Davis out till the end of the month and tries to go long term. But the squad's there now. Liam Bailey pushing for a start as well. Bertrand Traore back fit. So there's options there. So would you stick with that same 11, Dan James? What would you?
Martinez,
I don't even know if he'll play a back three. It's all up in the air for once with Villa, which is really entertaining.
I think we'll go back to a 4-3-3 at home. I think Bale will start, and I think Martinez will be back in there.
Yeah, who drops out? Ings.
It's really hard when you say it like that. I feel like he's not gonna.
He scored two in the first three, didn't he? So how did he drop him?
It's not like he had a really, really poor performance against Chelsea. It's just like, he just wasn't there.
Yeah.
Like in it with it. And, you know, not unlike the previous game. So it's really hard, but I just don't see them dropping Ings because he's.
I think Watkins might play off Ings up front from the left and Bailey on the right, I think.
You have Brendier coming back as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how you fit them all in. This is not our problem to solve, is it? It's a nice problem to have. And Villa have got options.
You made five changes at Chelsea. It's unheard of, Villa, isn't it? Really, five changes.
Don't make five changes in four games.
I saw a stat from Who Scored before the Chelsea game that Villa had used something like 22 players in the first three games, and it took us to like February to use that many players in the season prior. So, yeah, I don't know what that number's up to now, but that's the problem with the inconsistency, isn't it? And why Villa's results haven't been four wins out of four, because we're not playing the same team in every game. That is a problem.
Hasn't been a settled side yet, has there? Been issues, and hopefully... Yeah. I think Deesman's getting close to his strongest 11. I think he's getting closer. I've seen that at the weekend. So, but I think he will change it quite often this season. I really do. And like you say, I think opposition managers will be a bit thrown back from Villa when the two sides line up. So it bodes well. We'll see what they got the weekend.
Well, we'll call it a day there for this podcast. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in on this Monday morning. Thanks to Ash and James for joining me to chat all things Chelsea. We'll be back on Friday with an Everton preview with one of the lads from the Liverpool Echo, I believe. And then, yeah, we'll react on Saturday evening when we get home from Villa Park to hopefully a big 3 points for Villa. So thanks very much for watching, and up the Villa.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then... Up the Villa.